Good afternoon. As you said, my name's Christina Wolf. I'm a graduate student at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. And I have a long title basically to say we're investigating how grazing with sheep can possibly affect carbon and other soil properties. So I'm gonna start with a short introduction. Given that 50% of the Earth's terrestrial surface is covered with rangelands, they present a possible or a potential area for us to concentrate on for carbon sequestration. And so we hear a lot about carbon sequestration and atmospheric carbon. We have excess atmospheric carbon. So where was the carbon before? Why is it such a problem now? Well, in the past, the carbon was beneath our feet. It was stored deep underground. We pulled it up as fossil fuels and we combust it and it enters the air. Excessive tillage can expose organic matter and this causes carbon to flux into the air. Overgrazing plants can result in reduced plant populations and expose soils, and again, this results in carbon fluxing into the atmosphere. So we end up with more carbon in the atmosphere. So because rangelands are so extensive, people have presented them as a potential carbon sink. So given that rangelands are also used extensively for grazing, it follows that we would want to investigate how grazing might play into rangelands being used as carbon sinks. And proper resource management while we're grazing is going to be very important in that process. So the objectives of my research were to identify these variables related to soil carbon sequestration, to determine if planned grazing can change soil organic carbon and other properties that we've identified, and to quantify any changes in the variables due to grazing, and to investigate the relationships between these variables. So we did a lot of analyses. There were over 20 different variables. We did vegetation analyses where we looked at the density of different species, particularly some of the perennial species out there. We quantified forage utilization and the amount of forage there before and after grazing. We also did a lot of soil analyses. So carbon and nitrogen were some of the ones that we concentrated on the most, but we also wanted to look at how some of the other soil properties could perhaps be interacting with carbon and nitrogen. So soil pH, bulk density, aggregate stability, etc. So this is an aerial photo of the site where we are doing the study. I've been doing a lot of literature reviews, and James Bartholomew had suggested that rather than creating plots for study, that we actually use plots that were already established, that were already being managed as we might manage them in the real world. So we found this site immediately adjacent to Cal Poly property. It's on state property, and this site right here on the northern end has been managed by REST. There's been no livestock grazing for about 100 years, and we have 6 plots located on this site. And on this site, there has been grazing for the past 6 years, planned grazing for the past 6 years. And when I say planned, that just means that we looked at the soils and we looked at the plants. We made sure that each time the animals went in to graze, the soils and the plants were fully recovered from the previous grazing. Each of the plots were chosen based on similarity in soils. So all the soils are mapped as the same series, the Los Osos and Diablo clay loam series. They were chosen for similar vegetation and similar topography. And these plots right here, the two marked as D, were moved from the study initially at the beginning because of their proximity to the eucalyptus trees, and there were changes in the soil properties that we didn't see in the other plots. So we removed them and added 2 other plots. So I'm going to talk about a few of these variables, the bulk density, aggregate stability, total nitrogen, and soil pH I'll talk about briefly, and then I'll get into soil organic carbon. So there's no difference in bulk density, no significant difference between the grazed site and the rested site. So oftentimes we worry that livestock grazing can cause compaction. In this case, we did not see that. The aggregate stability had a borderline effect, so of management. And what I mean by that is that at the rested site, there was a significantly lower percentage of dry stable aggregates than at the site that had been previously grazed. For total nitrogen, we saw a previous management, so either rested or grazed, and depth interaction. And so you can see that at the 0 to 3 centimeter depth at the site that was rested, we have lower total nitrogen than at the site that was grazed. But we see the reverse trend at 3 to 6 centimeters in the soil. What this comes out to then is that there is a overall slightly higher total nitrogen in 0 to 6 centimeter depth at the gray site versus the site that had not been grazed for the last 100 years. When we looked at soil pH, we had some very interesting results. What you have on the bottom axis here is this is 0 to 3 centimeter depth, and this is the 3 to 6 centimeter depth. And as you can see, they're relatively the same. There was no change with depth for soil pH. However, when you look at the rested site, the pH is significantly higher than at the gray site by 0.5 to 1 pH unit. So that's a big difference. At the gray site, we're seeing 5 to 10 times more acidic soils. And based on this information, and based on our soil surveys and randomly sampled soils, there was no effervescence with hydrochloric acid, so we determined that there were no appreciable inorganic carbonates, and so we determined that the total carbon that we calculated, or that was the results were given from the combustion analyzer, that our total carbon is equal to soil organic carbon. So now I'll get into soil organic carbon, and this is where it really gets interesting. In the 0 to 3 centimeter depth, we can see that at the gray site, soil organic carbon was an average of 0.6% greater than at the site where there was rest. Now this chain, or this difference, disappeared completely once we got to 3 to 6 centimeters. So we only saw this difference in the 0 to 3 centimeters, the surface layer, which is not unusual given that we expect most of our activity to occur in the surface layer. But I wasn't satisfied with just looking at an observational study. I decided I wanted to spend the next 2 years doing this. So we added an experimental component. And at each site, as you can see, the soils are indeed the same. And at each site, we applied, at the rested site, we randomly assigned half of the plots to be treated with grazing, the planned grazing, as before. And then three of the plots remained as controls. So at the rested site, three of those plots remained as rested. At the gray site, we randomly assigned half of the plots to be rested, and then the other three plots continued to be grazed. The livestock that we are using are sheep, and we began grazing in December of 2009. We're using a crossbreed of Finn sheep, Targi, Dorper, Suffolk cross, and we stock them at a density of 70 to 110,000 pounds per acre, and that's going to change when they are pregnant versus not, or when they have lambs at their side. They're utilizing forage at approximately 40%, and that takes between 6 to 10 hours for them to do that. So these are our preliminary results for soil organic carbon, at least. And what we can see is that, for the most part, there haven't been any changes, significant changes, as an effective treatment. However, you expect from November of 2009 to June of 2010, we would expect to see a drop in carbon, and indeed we did on all of the sites, for all of the plots. Now, I thought this was interesting. At the graze site, for all plots, we had a very slight decrease in carbon, and so it was a little different from the rest of the patterns. I find that interesting, but we're not exactly sure at this time what that means. We're going to have to wait another year to see if that continues, that trend continues. So for rangeland managers in particular, often we say our goal is to increase organic matter in the soil by 1%. If we can increase it by 1%, we would be increasing the amount of carbon in the soil potentially by billions of pounds across 43 million acres of rangeland in California. That's extra. That's not what's already there. So as we increase organic matter, we increase soil organic carbon. And potentially, if we're increasing soil organic carbon, then we're increasing carbon sequestration. And rangelands, because of their breadth and span across the entire world, have been implicated as playing a possible role in mitigating climate change and reducing atmospheric carbon. So we're investigating the potential role then of planned grazing in rangelands for the possible mitigation of increased atmospheric carbon. And at the end of the study, we'll determine whether we can reject or fail to reject the hypothesis, and the hypothesis is just that either there's a difference with planned grazing or there's not a difference with planned grazing. You know, is the rested site the exact same as the graze site? And then we're also going to investigate the relationships between soil organic carbon and all of the other variables that we're looking at. So is there something else that might be causing the difference that we're seeing other than just grazing? I'd like to acknowledge all my advisors at UC Davis and at Cal Poly, and thank them very much for their help, and we'll continue with the study for at least another year. These are my references. And if you have any questions, please.
Any questions?
Yes.
What proportion do you think carbon's due to manure versus plant turnover?
Well, I would expect that those are related. Certainly, with the manure, we're adding some organic matter in a different form than it was there before. Before, it might have been trapped in the plants. We're processing it. We're trampling it in the soil. So that's going to definitely add organic matter into the soil. But it's hard to say at this point whether it's just the addition of organic matter or if it's actually an effect of the grazing. Now, certainly if we're looking at grazing and they're adding organic matter, that's a beneficial effect on its own by adding organic matter. So I don't know necessarily that we're going to be able to tease that out in the end, but we're going to look at those relationships absolutely. Yes?
I noticed in your experimental design on the, I believe it was the rested area, if you had three rested plots side by side.
Yes.
Were they selected randomly?
Absolutely.
And secondly, I noticed in the picture we have some sloping here, some terrain. How can you take into account any terrain effect on the results of the previously rested area?
Well, for the first question, yes, they were all randomly assigned. So it just happened to fall that way. There was not a whole lot I could do about that because we wanted them to be randomly assigned. For the slopes, there is some slope, but we're not seeing any evidence of erosion. In fact, we do trend monitoring and line transects across all of the plots. We do diagonal transects, and we do over 100 points at each of them, and we've seen no evidence of erosion. So we're not concerned about the small effect of slope because there's most of the, for the most part, the slope is very minimal. And in particular, in this picture, it was actually on the ground taking a picture up, so it does exaggerate, unfortunately, the slope effect, but there is a very minimal slope effect.
Time for one more question.
Yes.
With the animals present, there's urine, there's nitrogen deposition. Are you looking at microbial biomass activity in the two treatments? That nitrogen could stimulate more microbial biomass, which is a precursor to carbon.
Right, and that's a very, very good observation. But we are not looking at microbial biomass. We're already looking at so many different things as it is. But we're not looking at microbial biomass, but we are looking at different animal activity, insect activity, rodents, any other type of above ground. Well, there's also below ground because of rodents. But any type of macro animals, we are looking at the incidence and proportions of animal activity in each of the plots. And I think that would be related in a sense because the more animal activity we see, we might also expect to see more microbial activity or more insect activity. We might expect to see more microbial activity.
Thank you, Ms.
Also, the nitrogen from the humane, which is a good growth of your grass.
I'm sorry, the door was opening. I couldn't hear.
The nitrogen from the humane, from the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Grass.
Yes, that is a possibility. And so that's certainly a benefit of the grazing.
Thank you.